Good morning. This is the Blitz. Right back. Start the week. It's been a while. Had to give you a good morning without my friend Charlie Collier beside me hosting. He's running a little bit late this morning. A little bit of Thanksgiving traffic coming back into town. But I'm Andy Brock. Sam Beard is behind the board, also behind the mic. We're happy to be back.
Feels good, man.
Yeah.
Feels good to be back.
It's been a week off, so everyone was kind of in different places for Thanksgiving, obviously. Charlie went down to the Bahamas, watched Tennessee basketball, so I'm really looking forward to hear how that experience went. Obviously, yep. A very big weekend for our Tennessee basketball team.
Huge.
And then you were back in Franklin, right?
I was. Had a little time with the family. Had some relatives from out of town come back in town. So, nice to have a little break.
Yeah.
Good to get back home for a couple of days. But it's been a while since we talked some sports, man. A lot has happened.
So much has happened. Like, it was one of those, like, feelings that when we didn't have a show on Monday, it was like, oh, man, this would have been like a good Monday to actually really dissect everything, because the last time we had a show, Tennessee was in the playoff hunt.
Yeah.
And now there's been a loss in between, and then a good bounce back win in between. Tennessee basketball has looked good in between. I mean, the Titans, what, they lost yesterday?
Yeah, we lost yesterday.
Yeah, but
Bengals, it's our kryptonite.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Man, they really might be. Joe Burrow has y'all's number. I didn't get to watch that game, but
the end of the game was unreal. Did you see the end of it?
No. I haven't caught up with it.
They were driving. They were up 20-16, or I think. Yeah, 20-16, and they were in the red zone. If they scored a touchdown, the game was going to be over. We get them off the field. They're about to take a field goal, and then one of our guys touches the head or neck area of the long snapper. Ooh. And it becomes a first down, and then they just need the game out.
Huh.
So we had a chance to get off the field there, force a field goal, and
score. It's a weird penalty.
Yeah, I know. It is a very weird penalty.
I'm sure Charlie has good opinion on that.
Charlie was angry. He said he wanted to send this guy to jail.
Uh-oh.
For the rest of time.
Ooh, the referee or the guy who committed the penalty?
The guy who committed the penalty.
Okay, gotcha.
He said he wants to put him on the longest yard football team.
I mean, Charlie had about as good of a weekend as you could probably ever have over Thanksgiving break, so
yeah.
It makes sense that not everything went his way.
He's due for a loss at some point,
yeah,
right?
I mean, spending Thanksgiving in Atlantis has got to be top-tier just overall experience.
Yeah, you watch a Vols win every day, basically, and then you can just go out to the beach.
Yeah.
Just the beautiful beaches of the Bahamas.
Oh, unbelievable. We can go into Tennessee basketball later on. Tennessee football had a big win on Saturday, a drumming of Vanderbilt, so it is technically a victory Monday in itself.
Yeah, it is.
10-win season. What did you say, Sam, at the beginning of the year? You said 11 wins? I think that makes
11.
You the closest. I don't know if Charlie said 10.
I think you might have said 10, Andy.
I think I said 8. I think I went with a very realistic approach of 8-4, and I'm glad I'm wrong.
I think one of us called the South Carolina upset. Which was
I think Charlie was the one who was nervous.
I think
it was very. It was like in early October, though. It was like around the LSU time, and Charlie was like, "I'm kind of nervous about South Carolina."
I actually like went back into our old episodes, and I was trying to find the episode where we like did our season predictions. I can't remember which one it is.
Yeah, no. It would have had to been pretty early August or pretty early on in the show.
Yeah, do you think we did
middle to late August?
Like right at the start of the show? Like before football had even started up?
Yeah, it was definitely
like the week of football season.
It was definitely maybe the week before. Or
I couldn't find it.
So Charlie is saying that he went 10-2. So I don't know. I guess we can't verify that, but I guess we'll take his word.
Yeah, I guess we got Charlie's word.
He's saying 10-2.
He wins the contest for
secret little contest that we had. Sure.
He actually might have accurately predicted like every game though, if he called the South Carolina loss. And
yeah, it's impressive, I guess.
I don't think he had us beating Bama though.
No. I don't know. I guess if he has us 10-2 with the loss to South Carolina, then it was either Bama or Georgia.
Right.
Either way, maybe
when LSU, I don't know.
Either way, I feel like it's a little bit of a blessing in disguise that we took a nice week off after the South Carolina game, had a chance to maybe reflect on it a bit more and get another game in between, because it was a very frustrating South Carolina game, and you know, your defense looked completely different on Saturday against Vanderbilt. And to be fair, Vanderbilt had just won back-to-back SEC games for the first time. And I mean, it was their first SEC win against Kentucky since 2019. I don't know when the last time they won back-to-back SEC games. So it was a Vanderbilt team that was on a pretty good hot streak.
Yeah, no, they looked good coming in. It was, I think it was big for us. You know, like Heupel said, the kind of a culture win, like he was calling people out for at the end there. Just, I don't know. You know, you get you have so many people that are kind of counting you out for the rest of the year after everything that had happened in that South Carolina game. It was just good to see a good performance by the defense, see your offense show some new faces and everything. It was also nice with how many people we had out. They just our second and third string guys stepped up. It was big time there.
How did you and your family balance all the sports that were on TV over Thanksgiving break? Because it was, in my opinion, it might be one of the best sports weekends I've ever experienced with, you know, Feast Week hoops. I mean, you got Tennessee basketball playing for 3 days in a row. You got so many good college football games, NFL football on Thanksgiving. The FIFA World Cup has been on all week. I mean, I don't remember a week that's been as entertaining as this one.
No, yeah. You hit that nail right on the head there. I mean, Feast Week is, I think it's the best week in of the year in sports, honestly. It's like outside of March Madness.
Sometimes it kind of flies under the radar, but I don't feel like this year it did. Like, this year it was kind of like in your face. Maybe it's just because, you know, Tennessee was extremely competitive in Atlantis, but like this year it was like, hey, we're going to contend with NFL here, like in college football, like Feast Week.
I feel like all the other tournaments were like very competitive too.
Yeah.
You saw the end of that. Did you see the end of that North Carolina-Alabama game?
Four overtimes yesterday?
Yeah, like there's
out of
just,
nowhere.
The PK-80 was a good tournament. Atlantis was a good tournament. Like,
have they always done the Phil Knight Invitational? Is this a new thing?
Yeah, it's pretty new. It's in the last 2 or 3 years, I think.
Is it bad I had to look up who Phil Knight was and I didn't know he was the Nike guy?
Yeah, I think that's kind of bad,
isn't it? That's pretty bad. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I'd heard the name before and I was like, who is this guy? And I don't know. I just it's never one of those individuals, I guess, that it was just on the top of my mind is like, yeah, that's the Nike guy.
I get why they have it out there, but like,
and I was wondering, I was like, why does he
get out of Portland?
He doesn't just have one tournament named after him. He has two now. Like, because they had the Phil Knight Legacy Tournament.
Now, that I didn't know.
So, it's like,
what's the difference?
I don't know. I guess they're both in Portland, and they were both going on at the same time. So, clearly, they had to be in two separate venues in Portland. But, like, they were two massive, like, tournaments. Like, Duke was in the Legacy one, and North Carolina was in the Invitational one.
Oh, I just thought that was all one.
No.
And they just, like, didn't end up playing, like, a championship game where both sides meet.
No, there were two separate Phil Knight tournaments going on. And so I was like, what is going on to where I've never heard of this tournament? And now they've just got two big old tournaments in Portland, and there's really good teams like Purdue and Gonzaga and Duke were in the Legacy one.
Right.
And I think Purdue made the championship game, right? And
yeah.
And yeah, Purdue
Smack
looked
Duke.
Really good. Purdue looked really good. And then yeah, the Invitational one obviously lived up to the hype with Alabama and North Carolina. Not even in the championship round yesterday. UConn went crazy, and they dominated the Invitational. So I think college basketball, they're making a statement with how the week went. Oh, Charlie's saying so Charlie's not even here, but he's still
contributing. I love the live listening from Charlie.
Yeah, he's listening as he's on the way. Again, Charlie was caught in some lovely Thanksgiving Monday morning traffic. So he's on the way, but apparently they are in conjunction with each other, which, I mean, obviously, both named Phil Knight something, and they're in the same city, but I just was very confused that there were two tournaments practically named the same in the same city, but, like, I had never heard of them until this year. I don't know if this is the first year they were doing it.
I just love the progression that you get of watching sports on Thanksgiving. You know, you get you get the three football games, and then you get some basketball games. And, like, up until – I mean, you can watch Bill Walton talk nonsense into a microphone at, like, 1:30 in the morning, basically, and still be watching some college basketball. It's unbelievable.
That made the Alabama-UNC game that much better with Bill Walton on the call. Like, because you wouldn't expect, like, an East Coast, a Southeastern Conference, like, like pairing be called by Bill Walton. You just don't get that a lot. But since it was because the tournament's on the West Coast, that's just where Bill Walton resides. It's just he'll never call a game in like Madison Square Garden. It has to be on the West Coast.
No, it's got to be strictly in Portland, California, or something like that. Oregon.
He's not veering from his roots out there. So that was really fun to see North Carolina, Alabama called by Bill Walton.
Do you like Bill Walton games?
Yeah, I do like
Bill
Walton. Do
you enjoy listening to
him? I do. I feel like, you know, an announcer's doing a great job. If at any point I'm like, I want to turn up my TV so I can hear what they're saying. Now, you know, half the time he's just speaking nonsense, it feels like. But
for sure.
I can't tell if it's like calculated nonsense, like he's doing this on purpose, or if he's just like genuinely like, you know, this is kind of who he is. So, I don't know. I'm always entertained. There's Charlie.
Let's go. Let's go. Welcome, Charlie.
You made it. Just in time.
We've got our guy.
To end the first segment.
I feel like it's a hit or miss, though, with those Bill Walton games. Like, I think people either really want to watch the game and, like, get into the game, or they want to just, they're just a little bit pissed off with, like, all the nonsense that he says.
Hey, Charlie.
How we doing, Charlie?
What's up, guys?
How we doing?
That was awful. That took so long.
Yeah. No, traffic was terrible yesterday even.
I didn't even come home yesterday because I was like, well, I got to get my cat after the Titans game. I was like, I got to go get my cat from my grandmother's house. And like,
very cat revolved.
Yeah, you know, and then I was like, well, every time I've ever tried to come back from Middle Tennessee to Knoxville on the Sunday after Thanksgiving, it takes like 5.5 hours just because every single Tennessee student that lives west of Knoxville is going to find their way on I-40 basically on Sunday afternoon. So I was just like, yeah, I'll leave at 5:30 in the morning. So I left at 5:30 in the morning, and then there was an accident, a pretty bad one, it looked like, I guess, that completely shut down the interstate, and we just sat there in park.
But I mean, it took me like 4.5 hours to get here yesterday.
Yeah, you should have just left this morning, except, well, that backfired too. But yeah, we made it. We're good.
Yeah, welcome in. You look
Feast
tan.
Week. Feast week, baby.
You look very tan.
Do I? I don't know if I've really did much tanning.
Nah, your face looks pretty tan.
I think I'm just kind of always a little bit tan. But thank you.
But a bit more.
Cool. What a weird week.
Yeah,
what
crazy
a weird week. Put like the last 3 minutes of the Friday show before we left and like top five moments before disaster.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Put that in
one of those. Oh, because we were like, oh, we're good.
We
were.
Hey, when
no
we get
show
back,
next week.
There's a good chance we're 11-1.
We were in a rush to get out of the show, and we were like, score predictions, quick. And we were like, Tennessee,
56-7. 58, to nothing.
South Carolina, zeros. Tennessee, 75, Vandy, 6.
What a wild time.
I mean, wow.
Humbling experience,
that
to say the least.
Me. That took part of my soul. I'll never get back.
I'm kind of glad that we didn't have a show the week after the South Carolina game. I think that would have been a bad couple first.
It was
days.
Our bye week. We hadn't had a bye week yet.
I would have been pretty emotionally unstable on Monday. I'll tell you that
yeah.
much. I turned my phone off after we lost, and I left it off until Monday.
I was worried about Charlie. I was.
Yeah.
Worried.
Well, my roommate
well, yeah,
had people calling
too.
Him like, "Hey, is Charlie alive?" And they like weren't joking.
Yeah.
Just because I turned my phone off. I just went to bed at like whatever 10 o'clock on Saturday after that game ended, and just kept my phone off. I didn't watch any football. Didn't check any scores. And Sunday I watched like 7 episodes of TV and like 3 movies, and I just listened to fictional stories all day. Fictional stories all
but
day.
The Bahamas revived your soul.
It really did. Honestly, that's the only thing that's keeping me alive.
That picture
and,
of you
and,
on air,
and
Charlie.
Up.
You looked so happy.
I did.
You know,
Charlie was on TV.
I mean, what's new, you know?
This one a little bit better circumstances.
Finally, yeah, that's what I was just saying. Like, this is the first time I've ever seen myself look happy.
I said
television.
Win or lose, you just got to hit a surrender cobra. Just keep it going.
Nah,
imagine
finally,
a championship surrender
I finally
cobra.
Got my redemption.
Yeah, showed him what's
I was
up.
I was really fired up for that game, too. Jalen Wilson.
He got some yelling at him, didn't he?
Jalen Wilson, I promise you he heard me. I know. Oh, I mean, for a fact.
There couldn't have been that many people in there to begin with. Whenever it's it was in a ballroom.
Like whenever it was silent, like I was yelling as loud as my lungs allowed me to, and I know he heard me, and I didn't say anything vulgar. I don't do that. I just consistently reminded him of his flaws. Just got in his head. Just, Jalen, you're a fraud. You're the most inefficient player in college basketball.
just
you shoot less than 30% on your jump shots.
Throwing Kim Pom stats at him.
I was just like,
according to Kim Pom, your offense efficiency.
I was throwing all of his efficiency numbers at him. I was like, you shoot less than 30% on your jump shots, yet you take 37% of your team's shots.
Just throwing a full database at him.
Your team's talking behind your back. They want you to shoot less. Just yelling at him constantly.
Good job.
I was in his head. But we'll catch a break here. We'll kind of reset. I don't even know where to start. There's just so much that happened. You guys are right, though. Feast week, that last week of sports, really was just one of the best of the year. But, hey, we're live. We're off and rolling in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Stay with us on the Blitz. Back here on the Blitz. Man, it feels weird. I'm a little rattled right now just after that whole week. There is nothing. I had the worst Sunday scaries of my life last night. There's nothing like going from like the Bahamas and not working to now talking about a football team that kind of collapsed a little bit there.
Talking about the Titans?
No, well, they also. I've just accepted that we're not going to beat the Bengals ever again. They just own us, and it just is what it is. Sometimes in sports, for whatever reason, they're just teams or players or whatever else, you know, just have your number. And that's the Bengals with the Titans. It is what it is. I just don't know what else to do. We kind of have, I mean, there are teams that, like, we kind of have had their number too. But Tennessee football, I don't know where to start, but I guess we got to reverse it a little bit to that South Carolina game. And before we move on and talk Vanderbilt and the current state, just we'll briefly dive into it and just wrap it up all at the same time. Andy, your just overall summary thoughts, everything that went through your head during and after the South Carolina game, as we just kind of give our little brief thoughts here before we move on.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, South Carolina, they just came out with a lot of energy, and I feel like you could feel that. And that, you know, they scored on those first few drives, and you're like, okay, you know, this isn't the first time this has happened. I feel like at a certain point you were kind of going touchdown for touchdown a little bit, and Tennessee was in striking distance, and you know, you weren't worried for a little bit because you were like, you know, if you want to play touchdown for touchdown, this is Tennessee offense that can do that, and they've done it before. And yeah, I feel like you just kept thinking that South Carolina was going to slow down, and they were, you know, going to start struggling like you had seen in some other games, but it just never happened, you know. Like, I mean, credit to South Carolina, like Spencer Rattler was pretty insane, but also it was like, you know, the defense just didn't play their best game of the season by a large measure, and that may be an understatement there, but it just, yeah, you know, it just really got out of hand, and there was no way to put out that fire, and it just seemed like it was one of those things that you just kept getting punched, and it was no real strong retaliation back.
It certainly was one of the more painful losses I think we've experienced, just given the circumstances. And yeah, I mean, an understatement. The defense might as well have not played. I mean, if South Carolina went out there and just went 11 against nobody, just routes on air, run the ball on air, at least they would have scored faster, and your offense would have had more time to match it. I mean, that was really what they had, like, three possessions that didn't end in a touchdown, and like one of them was like a kneel down and one of them was like a punt, right? And then we stopped once. And that offense, you know, had looked like a middle school offense for the majority of the season. And then all of a sudden we made Spencer Rattler, you know, look like what Spencer Rattler was supposed to look like coming out of high school. And, you know, I get, too, when you have a quarterback like Spencer Rattler that clearly has a lot of raw talent. Obviously, that raw talent existed for him to be able to put up some of the numbers he did at Oklahoma at times, for him to have that rating next to his name. But that raw talent hadn't really translated at any point this season, and not a whole lot in his career. You know, I guess sometimes when you get hot, you start playing kind of out of your own body, I guess, out of your element when you're a quarterback like that. And, you know, I guess some of that raw ability can just, you know, make you play outside of yourself, and you know, you can still channel some of what made you, you know, great at one point. But that defense, man, it was incredibly disappointing. And does it have anything to do with, you know, Jeremy Banks and his absence? I mean, I don't think that it's as related to Jeremy Banks and his absence as some people are making it out to be. You know, I think some of that situation has been blown up a little bit, but
well, clearly that would have helped a little bit, but like, you know, it's not just one guy is going to make it be
right.
You allow 60 points to then like, oh, just 30.
I think the defense, though, it seemed very out of sorts. You know, something just seemed off with the entire team. The vibe seemed off. Like, they didn't have the same kind of fire competitive spirit that they normally have. They played like they were angry. They played like they were frustrated. And when you play frustrated, it's normally not going to go well. And what really drove me crazy, too, was just the ability to, for every player on the defense, at least in the secondary, to have something to say after every play, too. I mean, just the constant jawing while you were simultaneously getting just destroyed by every member of the offense, I found to be really frustrating. I mean, just incredibly disappointing. But, you know, I think oftentimes as fans, when you have that crushing loss, when you lose when you're supposed to win, when you get embarrassed, when something like that happens, the emotional response, obviously, is to freak out and to try to figure out how that happened and try to, you know, I guess, reason that loss into some greater issue or blame it on one person or one unit. And, you know, the losses like that are kind of the toughest to accept sometimes, where it's just like, hey, you know, this loss doesn't mean that Josh Heupel's not the guy. This loss doesn't mean that you should fire Tim Banks, in my opinion. This loss doesn't mean that there's some major issue in that you've completely gone off the course that you're on. You know, it's not like you're not still on an upwards trajectory. It's not like you still haven't met expectations. The fact of the matter is you just played a really bad game. It was just an abysmal game. And again, that doesn't mean that this program isn't still headed in the right direction. That doesn't mean that Josh Heupel's not a bad coach. It just means that for whatever reason on that specific Saturday, you just didn't have it. And you let it get away from you, and it's just going to sting for a long time because, you know, yeah, it took away your ability to make the playoffs, but, you know, we don't need to make it into some bigger problem than it is. It's just, it's...
Yeah, you were a bad game away from making the right playoffs at the end of the day, like, in year two.
And as for, you know, the people calling for Tim Banks' head, I get the frustration. Like, obviously, your immediate, you know, the immediate thought there is to jump to the defensive coordinator. And certainly, you know, I guess... Yeah, Tim Banks can take part of the blame there. He can shoulder part of it. But at the same time, if you look, nothing he tried was really working. Nothing. And you know, he's already kind of at a disadvantage, both with the lack of talent, quite frankly, that you have in the secondary compared to an average SEC team. And then also just the offense that Tennessee runs, you know, he's going to be forced to put his guys on the field a lot. And they're still not as much depth as you'd like, given some of the roster attrition that you suffered when Josh Heupel took over and as you build that back up. So, I mean, yeah, I get wanting to blame the defensive coordinator, and I get that Tim Banks probably could have done a better job, but he could have, again, you know, it's tough when you try everything and your players just don't execute. And across the board, pretty much all 11 all night long weren't executing, or at least enough weren't to where you couldn't slow down South Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, bad game across the board. Like, yeah, you get, that's there. But Tim Banks, in other areas has done such a good job, you know, typically, like with the unit that he has, you know, inherited, especially just in year one, the way he got that group to, you know, be successful in a lot of different realms. And Tennessee's still building that side of the ball. I think that's something we've been saying, you know, all year. Like, this is a Tennessee team that can throw the ball really well and they can catch the ball really well. You know, in between there, you're still trying to build up a lot, and you're discovering more and more. But I feel like what Tim Banks is helped grow with what he's been given is, you know, a measure that's been pretty impressive in certain scenarios. Now, again, that game was just a bad game for everyone.
I also, when you talk about just building this roster and the rebuild in itself, when you think about it, right, you have a lot of upperclassmen that stuck around. I mean, you that's what you kind of had, and that's what Josh Heupel's been able to perform with, just, you know, guys that weren't necessarily his guys, a combination of some upperclassmen and, you know, guys he's been able to bring in through the portal. But where you really also lost a lot on your roster was you lost a lot of those freshmen, those sophomores. You know, you lost half of a recruiting class, basically, when Jeremy Pruitt got fired. You lost a lot of your underclassmen, and that's your depth, but that's also the guys that, you know, you're kind of building into starters now. So, you know, it took a minute to it's going to take still some time to replenish that. You know, you think about it, hey, you had those guys sort of towards the top of the depth chart that stuck around that were upperclassmen, but you had so many players leave the program that were underclassmen. You had so many players leave that recruiting class that, you know, your underclassmen, that section of your roster was left pretty bare. And when you've missed basically, you know, a year now, 2 years of developing those classes into future starters, again, it's going to take a while to build back up that depth and build back up that defense. It just, you need more talent, quite frankly. And you've been able to overachieve this year because you've had some really special players, especially on the offensive side of the ball. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you have to get more talent on defense. You have to have more than one reliable pass rusher. I mean, right now it's just Tennessee doesn't have guys that really win a ton of one-on-ones when it comes to the pass rush. So if it's not Byron Young, no one's really getting home on a consistent basis without simulated pressure, without actual pressure, without, you know, different stunts and whatever else. And when you're having to bring extra pressure, when you're having to, you know, simulate pressure, that also makes it difficult for a secondary that, quite frankly, could use an injection of talent. Luckily, now we're in a time with NIL and the portal where you could hopefully replenish that defensive talent faster than normal. I hope that Tennessee is a player for any and all members of the secondary that hit the portal, all the best. I think Tennessee will be a player, major player in the portal. But until you get some more talent on that defense and until you can have guys, until you can generate pressure with four men, until you can do some of these things, you're always kind of in danger of just putting up a stinker defensively, and that's just what happened. Now, on the bright side, you know, Tyree West, Joshua Josephs, I think they've shown some promise this year as pass rushers, especially Tyree West. And you got a commitment from Davian Hobbs over the weekend. You got a commitment from Chandavian Bradley this class. Like, you have guys coming in that pretty immediately should be able to get after the passer, and I think that can go a long way. But as angry as I think we all are about that South Carolina loss, you still are 10-2 in Josh Heupel's second year with a far less than complete roster, and you are absolutely headed in what appears to be a great direction. Doesn't take away from the sting. I think it's going to sting for a long time. You know, it hurts me to think about. It hurts me to talk about right now. But there's nothing you can do. But hey, you button up your bootstraps and you keep pressing forward. You get back to work. And I have confidence that this team and this coaching staff is going to do that. You know, I don't think that, again, there's any greater issues at hand other than the fact that you still just need some more talent on your roster. 10-2. It's a great year, and close the year out strong. We also got a chance to potentially see what the quarterback of the future might look like in Joe Milton. So we'll catch a break, and we'll talk about the Vanderbilt game and kind of dive into Joe Milton's performance on the other side.
Back here on the Blitz. So Tennessee turned back around Saturday and over at our vacation home, little Neyland West out there in Nashville. Bunch of Tennessee fans got to see a Tennessee football team come out and really just beat Vanderbilt asleep, basically, and pitching a shutout, putting up, you know, 50-plus points. Tennessee looked like a refocused team, and it's a pretty big win. You know, I understand it's Vanderbilt. I understand that you're supposed to beat Vanderbilt mightily. But given the circumstances that surrounded this game, you know, you had so many people that were looking at this game as a potential upset. You had a Vanderbilt team that had won back-to-back SEC games that, you know, it had an improving offense. In three straight games, they had scored 27 and 24 and 31. And, you know, given the mass amount of injuries that you had defensively, given what, you know, could have been a spot for, I guess, just to see a team that looks clearly disappointed to have their season kind of, you know, or their playoff hopes get blown away the week before. You could have seen a team come out and struggle with that Vanderbilt team. You could have seen a team come out and look uninspired, kind of lackadaisical, kind of monotonous, whatever else. And,
good,
you know,
words.
Instead they,
very good words.
Yeah, instead they came out and, you know, Josh Heupel kind of called it a culture win. Yeah, they went out there and they just handled Vanderbilt. They controlled the line of scrimmage. The defense stepped up and had a big game. And granted, it was pouring rain, but, you know, you really just ran all over Vanderbilt too. I mean, to the tune of, I think it was 11 yards a carry. Just a really impressive win. And I think that means a lot to see this team, you know, be able to get their heads back on straight and right the ship in such a manner. I think a lot of times when a team suffers a loss like Tennessee did to South Carolina, that next game doesn't look too pretty. You know, yeah, oftentimes you see them grind it out, you see them get a win, but, you know, to shut out your opponent to win 56-0, that's a good indicator that this team is still, I think, in this program, still definitely headed in the right direction. The trajectory is upwards, absolutely. And you know, this season, sure, South Carolina, you took about 10 steps backwards, but this season you've taken about 100 steps forward.
Yeah.
But what kind of stood out to you from this Vanderbilt game? I mean, you feel pretty decent about this team right now.
Yeah.
Joe Milton, how would you assess his performance? You
Cannon.
I know, because you've been a big Joe Milton is our quarterback guy next year.
He's just got
such an
arm.
You've been a huge Joe Milton guy. I know you have. So I want to know, are you still on the Joe Milton train moving forward to next year after you've seen him for about a game and a quarter?
Yeah, you know, I still really like Joe. I think there's still, like, you know, he needs more reps, I still think, you know? Like, his arm is unreal, and it's just so entertaining to watch him just, like, uncork one. I think, yeah, there was some issues there. You know, he wasn't hitting on all of them, you know? Maybe there's still those control issues with how big of an arm he has. So he wasn't perfect. He connected on a few good ones, but, you know, I think he did what he needed to do in this game. I'm really interested to see what he does in, like, a really competitive atmosphere again, you know? Like, for whatever bowl game Tennessee gets in, I think that's going to be a real good proving point for Joe, just because Tennessee didn't need to throw the ball in this game. The run game was insane. I mean, you were running the ball at 11.7 yards per carry. Like, that's an unreal – that set a school record. Like, Tennessee set a school record for yards per carry on Saturday.
Did not know it was a school record.
School record.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, 362 yards on the ground. So you really didn't, like, need to throw too much. So I'm interested to see how he handles, like, a late game pressure situation or how he handles, you know, we really need to get the pass game going here. Because, I mean, we just haven't really seen that in a while. Man, does he have a special arm? That's just, like, fun enough, you know? At some point, I feel like we're going to see an end-zone-to-end-zone toss where he just lets it fly 100 yards.
That arm, I don't know. To me, that kind of feels like looking at a sports car that has just, like, no safety features.
Yeah, no, like, you know, it is sometimes.
Just like, look how pretty it is.
It is
also
pretty.
Doesn't have airbags. oh, wow, like, it can go so fast. Also, like, the seatbelt's a little loose. Man. Like, it's just, there's a lot that makes you go ooh and ah about Joe Milton, but there's too much that makes you go, oh, man. And
I mean, yeah, there definitely needs to be some fine-tuning. And the good news is I feel like if the coaching staff feels comfortable with, you know, his performance here.
He's been there long enough that you think these issues would have looked a little bit more corrected by this point, though. And Saturday, I think, told me pretty clearly you're going to need a new quarterback next year. It's not Joe Milton. That's where I'm at with Joe Milton.
Interesting.
I was at a point with Joe Milton after he ran out of bounds to end the game against Ole Miss where I wouldn't really ever considered him he would never have then made it back into consideration to ever start for my football team without injuries. You know, he was a good guy to bring back and have his backup quarterback, a guy that people really like to have around. And, you know, I'm not knocking him as a person by any means, but as a quarterback, I just don't think he has the processing abilities, the football IQ, the arm accuracy, the touch to really operate specifically this offense. Because this offense, you need a really efficient quarterback. I mean, one simple overthrow can derail a drive. Because you're not, I mean, you're taking what the defense gives you. And if they're giving you, you know, 5-6 yards a throw, 4 yards a throw, all of a sudden, you know, if you get 3 yards on a run on first down and then, you know, second down, you have a little 5-yard throw that's open and you throw it into the stands, you're in third and long and, you know, that kills a drive. Like, you really need an efficient quarterback in this offense, and I just don't think that's Joe Milton. You know, he'll still get his chance to compete, and I imagine, you know, he will probably come into camp still as QB1 to start.
It's just hard to find anyone as efficient as what Hendon has done for the last year and a half.
I think it's also just gonna look more somewhat wild. Easy to find someone more efficient than Joe Milton. I mean, you just look at the throws, and they're just not there.
I get it.
Too many overthrows. There's not enough touch on the ball. You know, a 5-yard out route could be thrown in the first row. It's just I want Joe Milton to be good because you look at his makeup, his athletic ability, that arm strength, and you just think, man, what if with Joe Milton? But I think at this point you should be looking for a quarterback in the transfer portal, like a bridge quarterback. And you have that bridge quarterback, Joe Milton, Taven Jackson, and Nico Iamaliava.
I could see
all
that.
All four kind of competing. And there's a guy, Jeff
Sims.
Could
be good. It could be good for just to have competition, you know, just to at least be like, hey, you haven't locked up this job yet. Like, we still need to see more, which I do think you do need to still see more.
It didn't even feel like Milton was necessarily making the wrong reads in that game. Like, he literally just, like, he's too strong for his own good. Like, he can't put touch on the ball because he throws a laser beam.
Imagine catching, like, a quick little, like, slant route from him. Like, that would hurt.
You saw so Squirrel bad. White. Like, he threw a little out, like, a 7-yard out route to him on the sideline, and it hit Squirrel White in the chest, and he looked down, like, the air just got knocked out.
Oh, it would hurt.
I thought that he might actually, like, knock Squirrel White backwards a little bit.
Yeah.
At some point.
That would hurt so bad, I feel like, to catch a pass from Joe Milton.
I just think, though, we've seen enough. And we've seen enough from him at Michigan. We've seen enough from him starting last season. Now we've seen enough from him here that we're just going to have to accept the fact that Joe Milton is not your quarterback. And I think your quarterback's going to have to either, again, have to be somebody from the portal, Taven Jackson or Nico Iamaliava. I think there's a decent chance it is Taven Jackson or Nico Iamaliava, but I don't think it's going to be Joe Milton. And if it is Joe Milton, I don't think you can win more than 8 games.
I don't think we've seen the last. I think there's still more to the
Joe Milton story. What gives you confidence in Joe Milton?
His physical abilities.
Why is that not translated at any point in his career then?
I think it is. It's translating more than it has now compared to what it has ever before.
Yeah, so I mean, now he overthrows like one out of every four instead of two out of every four.
It's progress, and I feel like, you know, he was thrusted in here to this Vanderbilt game. It's just, it was his first start of the year. Like, I think you give him, I want to see him again. Like, I want to see him in a more pressured situation, and then maybe we can have a better analysis. But then, like, hey, give it a full offseason. Yeah, make it a competition. See if he, like, can win the job. Like, I feel like, yeah, the staff, I feel like they're going to get someone in there who feels like can operate this offense at a high level next year. And if he's the guy, if he settles in maybe a little bit more, if he gets confidence over a full offseason, then I'm all aboard.
You think Milton's starting by the Florida game next year?
Milton is the starter for game one next year.
By
without a doubt in my mind.
Without a doubt? I just...
Without a doubt.
I disagree.
There's no doubt in my mind that
I think
he is
Josh Heupel's a smart enough coach to realize what the ceiling is with Joe Milton.
I feel
Milton.
Like he does, but I just don't know if anyone's going to be above Joe Milton by this time next year.
I mean, I think you see five-star freshmen come in and play all
the
time.
Yeah, no, I know, but I just don't know what Nico's going to bring. I mean, if Nico comes in and he is, like, the guy, then yeah, if he's, like,
but
right
I think,
off the bat.
I think even if he's raw, you'd rather play a raw five-star than a raw 23-year-old.
Maybe it's a situation where it's like you let Joe start game one, then let Nico get some time there in the second half of some of these easier games, and then who knows?
I mean, you look at the schedule. Virginia, Austin Peay, at Florida, UTSA, South Carolina early next year, then a bye week, then Texas A&M, at Alabama, at Kentucky. You get UConn, at Missouri, Georgia the second last week of the year. Wow, that's also a little weird. And then you close the season.
Georgia's slowly becoming Ohio State, Michigan. It's like slowly getting closer to Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and then you get Vanderbilt to wrap up the year. With Joe Milton, I see you winning Virginia, Austin Peay, UTSA, Kentucky, UConn, Missouri, and Vanderbilt.
You're not even giving them Florida?
That's seven wins. And maybe you get one to two more out of at Florida, at Alabama, at Kentucky, and...
We're saying Florida and Alabama or maybes. They're both in the same category.
With Joe Milton as your quarterback, yeah, I'd put at Florida as a big maybe.
Mm.
I mean, if Joe Milton started this year, what do you think the record would be? Because this year you have a potential first-round receiver in Jalen Hyatt. I mean, you're going to have some pieces that leave between now and next year. I don't think you would have won that pick game with Joe Milton. I mean, you barely got past Pitt.
Well, it's not like Hendon played great in the Pittsburgh game.
I mean, I don't think Hendon played poorly in that Pittsburgh game at all.
No.
He had 325 yards and two touchdowns, and he dealt with some
drops. I think he still
would
have. I don't know. I feel like you probably wouldn't have won the Alabama game.
Which
sure.
I don't think you would have won the Pitt game.
You might not
have
won the Florida game.
You would have won the Alabama game, and I think the Florida and LSU games are very much up in the
air. He would have still won the LSU game. LSU is not ready for that one.
I think you're like a 6 or 7 win team with Milton this year.
I think this year you would have gone
8 or 9.
7 or 8 and 4. 7 and 5 or 8 and 4.
Yeah, I mean that's.
And I think that next year your ceiling with Joe Milton is 8 and 4.
It might be, but again, like what other options are you going to have? Like what? Where?
Taven Jackson or Nico Iamaleava?
You think Taven Jackson is ready to go? You think he's a 10 win quarterback?
I think I would rather at this point try to find out who's going to be the quarterback for multiple years and get him reps and get him to begin to develop. If the quarterback, you know, if the other option is Joe Milton and his ceiling is an 8-win.
I know
season.
It's just the debate is like, do you throw in a Nico and Taven so that you're good in 3 years, or do you want to compete again next year?
Well, I think you can still compete again next year with a Nico or with the Taven.
Maybe you can, but like I feel like I don't know. I understand it because it's like I guess the potential with the other guys are so much brighter at some point, but then like you know Joe's probably a guy who can at least guarantee
wins. You see young guys come in and play from the get go all the time and play at a high level.
Yeah,
it's just rare.
Like it's hard, not
it's,
easy.
I mean, it's rare because there aren't a ton of like 5 stars, but it's also like you have one, of those guys. I mean, I don't know.
I can see it. I mean, it just depends on, you know, what Nico brings right off the bat. I think if he's the guy.
There's been rumors of Sam Hartman hitting the portal from Wake Forest.
Well, if he hits the portal, then let's just do that.
I'm cool with that.
I don't know. I mean, you look at like the top 10 quarterbacks from 2021, like Quinn
Drake
Ewers.
May. Come on,
Quinn
over
Ewers
Drake
would
May.
Have been able to play pretty immediately. I mean, he did at Ohio State, but like, I mean,
yeah.
You know, he looks like a guy.
No, I think
like
of Caleb Williams.
Williams
I
like
think
did
of Caleb
play.
Williams,
Sam
yeah.
Horde still hasn't cracked the lineup. Like Brock Vandergriff hasn't. J.J. McCarthy got run. Kyle McCord, you know, he has to wait in a long line of Ohio State quarterbacks. That's not really like quite the same. Like Drake May, Jackson Dart, like Tyler Buckner. Those guys have all played early. I mean, I think
Spencer Rattler.
I don't know. I just think when you look at young players like that, like especially at the quarterback position, like those guys can still get in there pretty early.
Yeah. Oh, I would love to see that. If Nico comes in and he's like Johnny Manziel.
Like you saw Connor Weigman even, like the second best quarterback in last year's class. He didn't start the season, but I think maybe Texas A&M kind of wishes he would have. Honestly.
Shout out Aggies.
Yeah.
Big win.
Big time.
Their fourth of the year.
LSU fans absolutely deserved every bit of that.
What a, like, man. Their first game of the year and then their last game of the year. Devastating.
Well, man, we're out of time in hour one. I feel like there's just so much that happened. Like, we're just not going to get to it all today.
Nope.
We'll try.
That's fine. We got a whole
hour
week.
Two on deck. Stay with us on the Blitz.